Okay. Well, we're reading from the Jiva Dharma. I have an iPad, so it's hard to say what chapter this is. Okay, one second. Let me just get the chapter. Okay, we're on chapter 17. Pramaya, the Jiva's liberation from Maya. One second here.
Wonderful.
Okay. Okay, reading from the Jiva Dharma, chapter 17. One thing I should mention is I'm in Moscow now and I have very good reception. So if the class goes off or reception is bad, you can just send me an email. I'm doing it by Skype, but I'm right next to the router, so it should be okay. So reading from Jiva Dharma, chapter 7. Om Vijnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksurunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Manchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Well, greetings from Moscow. Separation from Vrindavan, somehow when you're there executing Krishna consciousness, you almost don't realize the power of it. Although I was, but not to this degree. Excuse me. It's like, you know, if you take poison, you may not feel the effect immediately, but it doesn't mean the poison's not working. It's like that with Vrindavan, too. Just the level of the facility it gives there for just focus on Krishna is just phenomenal. It's just chanting and hearing in classes and going out and it was really wonderful. I'm happy to be here in Moscow too. I have a very nice disciple, Ananda Govardhan, who inspired to facilitate my preaching and also get a higher quality for own life, built a beautiful, it's a four-story building, and it's like a jewel with white sandstone and a big dome and all kinds of Rajasthani furniture, and the bottom floor is a yoga hall and Ayurvedic treatments, astrologer, and different things like that. And and then on the floor that I'm in is residences, because they have Ayurvedic doctor or yoga teachers or something from Kerala that live here also. And then there's a kind of an apartment that I have with a satsang hall and so many facilities here. And then the family lives on the top two floors. And so it's nice to be here too. But I'm determined to keep this up. Now I'm doing more traveling. And I can see it's more challenging. But this is really my life, the Shastra. And this is the basis of the Krishna consciousness movement. In fact, I just got a wonderful book from a good friend and godbrother called Our Family Business, The Great Art of Distributing Srila Prabhupada's Books. it's highly recommended because it's not just a manual for book distribution, but it really, in a very profound way, outlines the importance of Shastra and the importance of living by Shastra by those who distribute Shastra. In fact, in the and it's very, very thorough. Even in the acknowledgments, he gives me a little acknowledgement for helping him on one chapter called the thoughtfulness principle. That there's one side which he also presents the potency of the books. You touch it just once. But also the importance of the proper presentation of Krishna consciousness, and supporting it with so much Shastra, so much reference from Prabhupada also. You know, so it's a very balanced book. It acknowledges even the mistakes that were made in the past, but doesn't obscure the importance and meaning of distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and the potency of it. But anyway, I like to share Shastra. It's my life, and it's my conviction that this is how people become transformed. This is the message of Vyasadeva for the Kali Yuga, that people get transformed by Shastra. So we're in the part of Jiva Dharma, and we're following Vrajanath. Most of the people that are listening, but even if there's someone new, are aware of the plot. Vrajanath's trying to come to Krishna consciousness, and his family is opposing because he feels he has the spirit of renunciation, and he would best serve Krishna from that platform, while another person would best serve it from the platform, kind of the platform of attachment, you know, raising a family and satisfying one's needs in a regulated way. But he feels that with one man's food is another man's poison, and that would be a disturbance to his desire to serve Krishna consciousness. Of course, even Lord Chaitanya wanted to make sure that that's not an artificial renunciation, that we're doing it because we're losers in the world, or because we're losers in the world, or we have a misconception about renunciation. Of course, Lord Chaitanya sent Raghunath Das Goswami back home to act as an ordinary pounds and shillings person, just to set the example that, and he was successful, that, you know, renunciation is something that's not cheap, and should only be done by those who are qualified for it. Anyway, somehow he has that inspiration. His family is against, and he has a cousin who's kind of materialism personified and tries to cause some rift. What a horrible thing between him and his guru, by politicking, you know, back and forth. And anyway, they quickly go on, him and his guru. They feel we have the discrimination to understand who's a Vaishnava and who's not. And they don't dwell on this person's offenses. Rather, they want to go forward in the discussion. And the discussion they've been having is about the Dashamula, which is 10 key Krishna consciousness, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, 10 key verses. And so he wants to know how a jiva, a living entity, becomes free from Maya. Because they described how the jiva became entangled in Maya. Now, how does he get out? What is the process? And that's the seventh shloka of the Dashamula. So that's what their discussion is going to be based upon. And that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's genius in presenting Krishna consciousness. It's really his genius in presenting Krishna consciousness. So he said, when in the course of wandering amongst higher and lower species in the material world, a jiva is able to behold a Vaishnav absorbed in the flowing rasa of Sri Hari Bhakti, Rucha arise in his heart for following the Vaishnav way of life. By chanting Sri Krishna Divyanam, he gradually becomes free from his conditioning. Step by step, he then gains his intrinsic Chinmaya Sarup, transcendental form, becomes qualified to taste the pure and spiritual rasa of direct service to Krishna. So this is the process. You're wandering, and somehow or other, you meet a Vaishnava who's absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and a taste arises, I'd like to follow his way of life. And step by step, then you become qualified. And Brajanath, he hears it from his guru, but he wants pramana. And in any educated discussion, you can talk all you want. Of course, guru represents pramana, but he, for his faith, he wants his guru to state where this is from, because the Dashamula is something that's written based on Shastra. But what Shastra is it written on? So every point that's made, he wants something clarified. So he said, I'd like to hear some evidence from the Vedas. Then, because I discussed this before, I'm going to go quickly and come back to the point where we were. So he quotes the verse from the Upanishads about the two birds on the tree. And this is how, somehow or other, at a particular time, the living entity in the heart turns to God, who's always been there as the super soul, wanting to instruct us, but we can't hear. My mother used to use the phrase, mother death. You know, take out the garbage. I will. Take out the garbage. I will. Take out the garbage. I will. It must, you know, you don't hear what you don't like. And if we're absorbed in sense gratification and we like sense gratification, then we don't hear God in the heart speaking to us. It's as simple as that. So he turns to, so that the soul turns to God. And then Vrajanath wants to know, is this liberation? When you see God and you become free from all anxieties and directly perceive his when you directly perceive God. And Babaji makes an interesting point that most people misunderstand liberation as only becoming released from the clutches of Maya, but don't understand that the real liberation is the glorious position that one receives after liberation. And that's quotes from the Bhagavatam, that famous verse. Muktir hidva yata rupam surupena vivastita, that you give up the world, but you attain something else. It's not just negating the world and negating your individuality and negating your love and negating your desires. It's negating the world for the purpose of being reinstituted in your real ego. Sarupena, your real form. So he explains that to him. And then Brajanath wants to know, well, what are the symptoms of those of people who attain liberation? And Babaji, very versed in the scriptures, quotes from the Chandogya Upanishads, that there are eight symptoms. qualities of liberated soul, free from all sinful activity, as well as any addiction or desires for sinful activity. He's not subject to the miseries of old age. Liberation, you always remain young and fresh and have no tendency to decay. It never comes to end. You never die. You're never morose. You have no sensual desires. You have a natural inclination to serving Krishna. You don't have any other desires. And this is the type of person that one should associate with. And Brajanath says, it says in the Dashamula, the good fortune of the jiva who is wandering aimlessly in the material world begins when he meets a rasika Vaishnava who relishes the nectar of Hari. I have a doubt about this. Kindly explain it if one could eventually attain Hari Bhakti by performing pious activities such as Astanga and cultivating Brahmagyan. So Brajanath says, this is my doubt. You're just saying one in the verse, the Dashamula, that one can only get liberation. That one can only get liberation by the association of a devotee who's enriched in relishing his relationship with Krishna. Then one can only become liberated by that. But can you get liberated by, you know, Astanga Yoga, for example, or cultivating Brahmagyan, which is Jnana Yoga? But basically he says, well, can't you be liberated by Jnana Yoga? Because Astanga Yoga is also Jnana Yoga. And Babaji quotes from the Bhagavatam. It's a famous verse from the 11th, 12, 1 and 2. And it describes so many activities from yoga, going on pilgrimage, accepting sannyas, austerities, penance, religious duties, studying Sankhya philosophy, yoga, etc. And he said, but only sadhu sangha can controls me completely. And then he quotes from the Hari Bhakti Sudaya, where it's like a crystal that reflects the color of the object which it is in contact with. Similarly, you develop your qualities by the people that you're with. Okay, and then Babaji explains that even unintentional association with saintly persons bring good fortune for the jiva. Even unintentionally, he quotes from the Bhagavatam 3:20-3:55, the association of materialists is the cause of bondage in the material world, even though one may not know that this is so. Similarly, association with saintly persons, even if it happens by chance or unknowingly, is called nisanga. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Nisham Matistavid Alukramangrim Sprishat Yanarto Pagamo Yadarta Nahi Yasham Padavrajo Bashekam Niskinchananam Vrinityavat. The lotus feet of Arukram, Krishna, who is glorified for his uncommon activities, destroys all inartas in the heart. However, those who are very materialistic cannot be attached to his lotus feet until they smear their bodies with the dust from the lotus feet of a Vaishnava who is completely freed from material attachments. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10:48-31, one is purified by the holy places where rivers such as the Ganga flow, and by the stone and clay deities of the deities. only after rendering them reverential service over a long time. However, when one has darshan of a pure devotee, he is purified immediately. And that is why Bhagavatam 10.51.53 says, Bhava Pavargo Brahmato Yada Bhavej Janasyata Yuchita Satsamagama. O infallible Lord, the jiva has been wandering in this world of birth and death since time without beginning. When the time comes for him to leave this cycle of life and death, he associates with your pure devotees. From the moment that he achieves this association, his mind becomes firmly fixed on you, who are the soul. Controller of all and the cause of all causes. One second. Then Vrajanath says, Baba, since time without beginning, Babaji is continuing. Since time without beginning, the jiva, who is eternally bound by Maya, has been moving in the universe, taking birth according to his karma, sometimes as a deva, sometimes in various animal species. From the time that he attains the association of saintly people because of his past pious activities, he fixes his mind very strongly on Krishna, the controller of all. So this is the Bhakti Lata Beach. This is what happens. I often describe when I go to Union Square, you know, I see the people coming out of the subway and some people just stop and just they listen and they look in amazement. And you have a sense that that's what's happening. From time immemorial, they've been going from so many species of life. By the mercy of Prabhupada, now they get the Bhakti Lata Beach, which is an experience of prema in a drop form that gives them the faith to continue on this path. Vrajanath, you have said by the association of Shuddha Bhaktis, you have said that the association of Shuddha Bhaktis is achieved by Sukriti. What is Sukriti? Is it karma or knowledge? So, okay, how do you get the association of pure devotees? And he said, well, it's by Sukriti. So he said, Sukriti, is it karma Sukriti? You did good deeds or jnana Sukriti? That you served philosophical analysis and you were becoming thoughtful. So he explains, the Shastras said there are two types of auspicious karma, Shubha karma that are in accordance with Vedic injunctions. One causes the appearance of bhakti while the other gives irrelevant inferior results. So he said there is auspicious shubha karma. There's good things that you can do. And of those good things you can do, one gives bhakti and one gives results which are temporary and therefore irrelevant. So he's going to explain. Performance of pious activities such as nitya and naimittika karma. That means we've studied this before. Daily activities, you may worship the sun god, or naimittika karma, activities like it's not daily, but you're occasional. Your father dies, you perform, a mother dies, you perform oblations to the ancestors, etc. So he said nitya and naimittika karma, studying Sankhya and cultivating Gyan, all give irrelevant results. The only auspicious activities that give bhakti as an end result, bhakti pradasu kriti, are associating with Shuddha bhaktis and with places, times, and things that bestow bhakti. See, the only auspicious thing that leads to a good result is somehow or other coming in contact with something in relationship to devotion. When enough bhakti pradasu kriti has been accumulated, it gives rise to Krishna bhakti. The other type of sukriti, however, is consumed after one enjoys its result, so it does not accumulate to give any permanent result. This is why it's irrelevant, because you perform some sukriti, you get the results, and when you enjoy the results, it's over. In bhakti sukriti, once you get that bhakti sukriti, it remains in your account. And it builds up. And if you use it, you just get more bhakti sukriti. So it just keeps on building and building and building. All the pious deeds in the world, such as charity, only result in achieving the objects of sense gratification. The sukriti of impersonal speculation results in impersonal liberation. Neither of these kinds of sukriti can give devotional service to Bhagavatam, to Sri Bhagavan. Activities such as sadhu sangha and observing Ekadasi, Janmashtami, and Gopunima all help to develop one's saintly qualities. Tulsi, Mahaprasad, Sri Mandir, holy places, and articles used by sadhu are all auspicious. Touching them or obtaining their darshan or pious deeds that give rise to bhakti. Brajanath, can a person obtain bhakti if he's tormented? If he's tormented by material problems and takes shelter of Srihari's lotus feet in full knowledge to become relieved of his problems. So can you attain bhakti if you come to bhakti because of your suffering and you want to be relieved from that suffering? I'm just thinking of one person that told me why they came to bhakti. They were suffering. And why they continue bhakti? Because they were suffering. And they got some relief. Babaji, the jiva harassed by the afflictions of the goddess of illusion may somehow understand through discriminating intelligence that worldly activities are simply troublesome, and that his only solace is Krishna's lotus feet and the feet of his Shuddha bhaktas. Knowing this, he takes shelter of his lotus feet, and the first step in this process of surrender is to take shelter of Shuddha bhaktas. The principal outcome of such an act is bhakti pradasukriti, through which he obtains the lotus feet of Bhagavan. Whatever renunciation and wisdom he had originally were just a secondary means of attaining bhakti. Thus, the association of bhaktas is the only way to attain bhakti. There is no other recourse. So, you know, somehow or other, one takes shelter out of anxiety. He doesn't really have bhakti yet. But when he comes to bhakti, somehow being attracted by this path, the path is to take shelter of Shuddha bhaktas. And the outcome of that is you get a sukriti for bhakti. So whatever renunciation and wisdom that the person originally had, they were secondary means of attaining bhakti. Because they didn't give him bhakti, but they somehow brought him an association of the devotees where he can get bhakti. So really, it's the association of bhaktis is to attain bhakti. There's no other recourse. Brajanath, if karma, gyan, renunciation, and wisdom are secondary ways of achieving bhakti, what is the objection to calling them bhakti pradasukriti? Well, I think Vajranath is so smart, he asked the question before Gail did. If karma, gyan, renunciation, wisdom are secondary ways of achieving bhakti, what is the objection to calling them bhakti, prada, sukriti? Bhakti, I think prada means to give. The sukriti that gives bhakti. Babaji, there is a strong objection. They bind one to inferior temporary results. The performance of karma has no permanent result, but it binds a jiva to the object of sense gratification. Renunciation and empirical knowledge can only lead the jiva as far as the knowledge of Brahman, and this conception of impersonal supreme principle prevents him from attaining Bhagavan's lotus feet. Consequently, they cannot be called bhakti pradasukriti. So you they may even bring you to the association of devotees, but you still don't have bhakti. You have people can be in the association of devotees and have karmic or impersonal conceptions. And that will only change when they take shelter of a pure devotee. It is true that they sometimes take one to bhakti, but that is not the usual course of events. So he said, yes, by that piety and karma analysis, you could come. It's not the usual course of events. Sadhu Sangha, on the other hand, definitely does not award any secondary benefit, but forcibly brings the jiva towards prema. It's explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25:25. Satam pasangam mama virya sambadho bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kata yachoshanara shvapabharga vartmani sradharatir bhakti anukramisyati. In the association of Shuddha Bhaktas, the recitation and discussion of my glorious activities and pastimes are pleasing to both the heart and the ears. By cultivating knowledge in this way, one becomes established on the path of liberation and progressively attains Shraddha, then Bhava, and finally Prema Bhakti. Rajana, I understand that Sadhu Sangha is the only Sukriti that gives rise to Bhakti. One has to listen to Hari Katha from the mouths of Sadhus, and thereafter one obtains Bhakti. Is this the proper sequence to the progress in Bhakti? So what is that sequence? You listen to Hari Katha, you get Sadhu Sangha, then you hear Hari Katha, and attain Bhakti. Babaji, I will explain properly the way of progression in Bhakti. Listen carefully. This is interesting. This is the whole progression. Whoa. It's a little bit long. Let's see how much we'll get. Okay. Only by good fortune does the jiva who is wandering through the universe achieve the sukriti that gives rise to bhakti. One of the many limbs of pure bhakti may touch a jiva's life. For example, he may fast on Ekadasi or touch or visit the holy places of Bhagavan's pastimes, or serve a guest who happens to be a Shuddha Bhakta, or have a chance to hear Hari Katha, Hari Nam and Hari Katha from the lotus mouth of an Akinchana Bhakta. If someone desires material benefits or liberation from such activities, the resultant Sukriti does not lead to devotional service. However, if an innocent person performs any of these activities, either knowingly or out of habit, without desiring material sense gratification or impersonal liberation, these activities lead to the accumulation of bhakti, prada, sukriti. So there's all these other things, but you may have a motive. But if you're innocent, then they can really, really touch your heart. So sometimes it's almost best, you know, that being in Indian culture has an advantage and a disadvantage. You know, you can be more cultured and respectful in certain ways, but you can also be more fixed in different conceptions that will prevent you from getting bhakti. After accumulating such sukriti for many births, it becomes concentrated enough to give faith in pure bhakti. And when faith is undivided, one develops a desire to associate with Shuddha Bhaktas. You know, it's interesting here. You accumulate sukriti for many, many births, and then you get faith in pure bhakti. What's pure bhakti? That I serve Krishna to give God pleasure, and I'm not asking to get my daughter married or to get whatever desire someone has, you know. You're worshiping just to become a better lover, to develop the soul. And it accumulates. And I realized this, too, in my preaching of Krishna consciousness. You know, just different people are at different levels. And, you know, you have to be satisfied that a certain person is still accumulating the sukriti to come to the platform of embracing pure devotional service. And I think an effective outreach of Krishna consciousness creates a very, very broad community. And not only the people who have the sukriti to fully surrender are accommodated in that community. Very interesting. By associating after accumulating such sukriti for many births, okay, by association one gradually begins engaged in performing sadhana and bhajan. And this is adau shraddha tatasadhu sangha. This is the process. It begins with shraddha. It begins with a taste of prema and appreciation there for it. And somehow or other, when the sukriti increases, that taste increases, then you'll want to associate with people. And when it increases, that are devotees, you'll practice. And when it increases, you'll give up your unwanted things in proportion to the purity of the chanting. Wow, that leads to the removal of anarthas in proportion to the purity of chanting. Yeah, the name is Krishna. I mean, we really have to get this into our heads. The name is Krishna. It's a dynamic moment. And the effect that you'll feel the name is to the degree that you have faith. And faith, I'm understanding, it's a mechanism. It's a mechanism in the mind, in one sense. Ultimately, faith is the experience of the soul, feeling the soul, which is consciousness and love. But there's a mechanism of the mind that opens you up to that experience. And that conviction is so important. The purity of the chanting, our conviction that this is God. And therefore, how we respond when we chant. It's so important to chant with concentration. It throws me off a little bit, you know, because, you know, I went to the airport, at 6 o'clock and get to the airport at 10 and 1 and then, you know, the next place and, you know, it takes a little time to get back into it. Vrindavan, just being in a proper place for 5 or 6 weeks, every day the same thing. Getting up really early, writing, then by 3:30, chanting and focused. And what happens is by that focus on the chanting, with that that there's a time and place for Krishna, your taste increases, your concentration increases, and the next day you have more faith and enthusiasm. When anarthas are removed, the previous faith is purified further to become nishtha, firm faith. This firm faith is also purified to become ruchi, spiritual taste. By the wonderful effect of bhakti, this ruchi is strengthened and takes the form of ashakti, transcendental attachment. Transcendental attachment matures into rati or bhava, which joins with the ingredients of staibhav and becomes rasa, the nectarian mellows of prema. This is the step-by-step progression in the development of Krishna praying. So rati, you come to transcendental attachment, this absolutely addictive focus, where when the mind wanders, you can't practically wander. And that type of exclusiveness of desire. And bhakti is really chanting and practices of bhakti is really is giving God the opportunity to hear our hearts. And he'll reciprocate accordingly. Ye yata mam papajyante tam sataiva bhajamyasa. You give God the opportunity to hear your heart. And when the heart really is sincere to the degree of an intense desire to serve, then God reciprocates and gives you his own essence of his bliss potency. This kind of deep rati, which also the Stai Bhav, at least it says Stai Bhav here, with your sense of relationship with Krishna. And it becomes rasa. It becomes a flavor that is a reflection of your relationship with Krishna. And that's love that actually satisfies God. What kind of love do you become satisfied with? You become satisfied that love, which is a reflection of a particular type of relationship and therefore has a particular type of flavor. And that is the goal of life. This is the step-by-step progression in development of Krishna Prem. The principal idea is that when people with sufficient sukriti have darshan of Shuddha Bhaktas, they develop an inclination to proceed on the path of bhakti. One associates with a Shuddha Bhakta by chance, and this leads to initial Shraddha, whereupon he gets the association of the Bhaktas a second time. The result of the first association is Shraddha, which can also be termed surrender, Sharanagati. The initial Sadhusanga is brought about by contact with holy places, auspicious times and paraphernalia, reciprocants of Sri Hari's grace, all of which are beloved by him. These lead to faith in his shelter. The symptoms of developing of such faith are described in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Paritya Ja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Am Tvam Sarva Pape Byom Muksiyasyami Masya. Here the words Sarva Dharman imply worldly duties, Smarta Dharma, Astanga Yoga, Samkhya Jnana renunciation. The jiva can never achieve his ultimate spiritual goal by practicing all these dharmas, which is why the instruction here is to give them up. Krishna says, my form of pure and condensed Satchidananda, appearing as Vrajavilas, the performer of wonderful pastimes, is the only shelter for the jiva. When one understands this, he gives up all desires for bhakti, material enjoyment, and mukti, impersonal liberation, and with undivided attention, takes shelter of me. This is known as Pravitti Rupa Shraddha, exclusive tendency to engage in Krishna's service. When such faith dawns in the jiva's heart with tears in his eyes, he resolves to be... Haribo? Haribo? Okay. He resolves to become a follower of a Vaishnava sadhu. The Vaishnavas whom we take shelter at that point is the guru. Vrajanath, how many types of anarth does a jiva have? Okay. Any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail, how was the reception?
Very good.
Wow. Right. That relieves me because if I can do it through a good Skype, I can do it anywhere. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, there were a couple of things. It caught my attention when you said that is it the only way to come in contact with a pure Vaishnav is through chant? Because I'm also wondering about the person who, you know, they're going through their life and maybe inspired by the struggles of life, they wish that they knew really what the purpose of life was, what, how am I supposed to respond to the challenges of life, what's my proper response to life. And so I'm thinking that, you know, because Krishna's in the heart, he hears this and therefore wants to put that person in contact with a pure Vaishnava to answer that question. And so I'm trying to reconcile that with the statement that he comes in contact by chance.
Oh, but I thought you said by chance. This is described in Madhurya Kadambini. I really forgot what that discussion is. I can understand your point. Is if everything is by chance, it just seems that God is just so, you know, whimsical or something. You know, one person gets it, and another person doesn't get it. Let me see if I can find that. It says, only by good fortune does the jiva who is wandering out through the universe achieve the sukriti that gives rise to bhakti. One of the many limbs of bhakti may touch a jiva's life. For example, he may fast on Ekadasi. When I said that, I thought, what? You know, people fast on Yom Kippur. It happens to fall in Ekadasi. They come to Krishna consciousness. Or touch or visit the holy place and serve a guest who happens to be a Shuddha Bhakta. Or have the chance to hear Hari.
So there's also a statement later on where you specifically said it's only by chance that a person comes
chance?
In contact with the... Yeah.
I said that
specifically.
Well, I said that?
I thought you were reading. Maybe you were not, but I thought you were reading.
Was it chance or chance?
Chance.
Yeah.
I thought that's what it
meant. I'm just saying. I have to find that section. Haribo? Yeah, I have to find that section. I don't know which is that section. Let's just go this verse right here. Only by good fortune does the jiva who is wandering out through the universe receive the sukriti that gives rise to bhakti. This is a very subtle point, and it was discussed in Madhurya Kadambini. If I can get a copy of that, I would revise that. That is, it's just by chance. I really have to discuss this with someone again to refresh my mind, because just by chance, I don't know. I'll have to get back on that, Theo. Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, just one little thing. You were describing the eight qualities of a pure devotee, and there were two involving...
They all seem, a lot of them, yeah, they all seem, many of them seem the same. Okay. I was reading them. Go ahead. A lot of them seem the same.
No. They. I was able to distinguish them, except for the two of them that involve not having any desires. Of course, one is, you know, no more material desires. But I think maybe it was the last one that said, aside from only having desires for Krishna, what is it that no desires but desires for Krishna?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were two that involved not having any more desires. One, of course, is not having any more material desires. And then the next quality was that you have desires exclusively for Krishna. And then I think the very last quality involving...
See, because this is a translation. This is where it really takes something to, you know, have the original Sanskrit, at least to look at it. Because then you can see the subtleties and the differences. I'm trying even now to find the particular verse. You still on? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Of symptoms.
Yeah.
Associate with that with no other desire. He has a natural inclination of serving Krishna with no other desires, and all of his desires are realized. The association of such a person should be sought after.
Oh, okay. I think the one we're missing is that all of his desires are realized. That's one of the eight?
No. Yeah, well, yeah, that's one of the eight. All of his desires
okay,
are realized.
All of his desires. Okay, that's it.
It's
desires.
A separate. Okay, thank you. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? I'm pretty happy that this medium works. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
This is Rajarade. Rajarade. Hare Krishna. We'll see you soon. I'm coming in soon. She'll come over your place. Yeah. Go ahead.
You are giving class through Skype?
Today I am, yes.
Oh, okay. Because I'm wondering like whether we have radio options.
I don't know. I don't know anything about technology. All I know is that's the only way I can phone it now. Okay, anyone else like to say hello? Hare Krishna? Anybody else? Okay, then we can end for today. Thank you.